Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. We, of course, did two Arscast extras this week, one on Monday, one on Wednesday after our Champions League qualification versus Porto. But, of course, the draw for the quarterfinals and the pathway to the final, including the semifinals, was made today, just a little while ago, and it makes a lot of sense for us to get on the mic and react to that. Of course, you will know by now that Arsenal will face Bayern Munich in the quarterfinal, and should we make it beyond Bayern Munich, we will face the winners of Real Madrid versus Manchester City in the semi-final. So it's a challenging draw, to say the least, but one which I think is exciting. There's a lot of possibility in there for Arsenal, the chance for perhaps a little bit of long-awaited revenge against the Bundesliga giants. And beyond that, well, who knows who'll come out on top in the other quarterfinal, but it's going to be a very, very difficult and challenging pathway to the final. But isn't that what it's all about? So with me to discuss the Champions League draw and the other bits and pieces going on since our win over Porto, it's Lewis Ambrose. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going all right. How familiar did that feel? The Champions League draw being made and the name Bayern Munich coming out alongside Arsenal's. I think I saw somewhere that we have met them five times in our last six Champions League campaigns. So there's something that's connecting these two clubs in a way that's a bit unusual.
Yeah, it certainly feels familiar. I was waiting for the path to the final to somehow include Olympiacos as well along the way, but obviously not this time around. Yeah, it's familiar in terms of City and opponent and badge, but maybe not so familiar in terms of the Arsenal that Bayern Munich might expect, and maybe the Bayern Munich that Arsenal can expect as well, I think.
Yeah. Tell me about Bayern Munich this season, because you know, resident in Germany and keen watcher of the Bundesliga, you have a lot more knowledge about what's been going on there this season. And like, I just had a quick look at their results. I had a look at the Bundesliga table. Obviously, they're 10 points behind Bayer Leverkusen. That is not a familiar situation for Bayern Munich to be in, but it's also not a familiar situation for Bayer Leverkusen to be in. They're having an extraordinary season. So how much of, you know, what the Bundesliga tells us is about Bayern being bad, and how much is about Leverkusen being absolutely brilliant?
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, right? Like, you look at the league and it's 11 years in a row that Bayern have won the league, and it's very easy to maybe see somebody else top of the league and think Bayern are therefore terrible and doing terribly. They're sort of doing as well as they've done last season and a couple of other seasons as well in that 11-year run of winning titles. They just haven't come up against a side that has gone 25 games now unbeaten in the league by Leverkusen. 21 wins and 4 draws. Bayern are still... They aren't maybe quite the demolition machine they were when we met them and invariably lost 5-1, but they are still a good team, a strong team, and somebody to be feared. I think there's, you know, an element of a corner being turned in recent weeks as well. Since the announcement that Thomas Tuchel would be leaving at the end of the season, he almost nodded to it himself. He did an interview with Archie Rintut, who I know has done the Askcast before. Yeah. A few weeks ago, and Archie, after the first game that they'd played, after the announcement that he'd be leaving at the end of the season, Archie asked him what that week had been like for him and if anything had changed. And Tuchel kind of smiled and was like, nothing's changed in terms of the professionalism and doing the job and wanting to win, but now I can make decisions, and come the summer, those players aren't my problem anymore if they don't like the decisions I make.
Mm.
And since then, Joshua Kimmich has not played in midfield, but at right back when he's played. And Thomas Müller's come back into the side and started every game. And it feels a little bit more like maybe Tuchel hasn't had to worry about the politics of a big club and a big squad and keeping people happy, and is more able to pick the team that he just thinks might win the game and not worry about any of the noise around it. And Bayern the last few weeks have played really, really well. They lost in Rome and were awful against Lazio in the first leg of their round of 16 game, and then absolutely battered them and won 3-0 in Munich. They won 8-1 at the weekend against Mainz. So, you know, I think it's easy to look at the league table, see that gap to Leverkusen and think, okay, we're not facing the same Bayern anymore. But, you know, they're not struggling to pick up results in the Bundesliga. It's 73 goals in 25 games this season already in the league. Harry Kane's on course to become the most prolific season in Bundesliga history in his first year with the club. And I think when you look at the points tally, we're still comfortably over 2 points per game, and two of their defeats out of four have come to the Bayer Leverkusen side that are beating absolutely anybody with some ease under Xabi Alonso.
Yeah, so it is a case of, this is not the Bayern Munich that we had such traumatic experience of in the past, but it's still, you know, very strong side, lots of danger in it. You mentioned Thomas Müller. Here is his reaction to the Champions League draw.
And it's Arsenal. Kai Havertz, my friend, I am waiting for you. No, it's a nice draw. Two very good teams, two very good stadiums, two very good cities. It will be tough, but I'm always positive. See you, Gunners.
So obviously he was recording in his local Sternbox, or whatever you call it over there. But yeah, a fairly. Like, Thomas Müller has annoyed me a lot over the years, and that was a fairly magnanimous reaction to that draw. I suppose when you're that experienced, you don't want to wind anyone up. You certainly don't want to give Mikel Arteta any ammunition, you know, above and beyond the lads, look at what happened last time, we've got to make it better this time around. But I mean, is he sort of an example of kind of the challenge that Arsenal are going to face in maybe much the same way as we did against Porto, that we all believe in the quality of this Arsenal team, and I think this Arsenal team is making excellent progress, but in Europe, the game is different. Your experience of this competition is absolutely an advantage. You know, and Bayern have plenty of that in this competition, in this tournament, down the years. Lots and lots of experienced players, and there's a sort of rawness, if you like, in European terms, for Arsenal.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's something, obviously, for us to overcome and to build on and learn from over the next hopefully the next couple of months, but also in the coming years, we've not been at the top table of European football for a long time. And we saw against Porto, sometimes you're going to have to eke out a result. Sometimes you might start to struggle with the opposition, with the ref, and all of these things, you know, they come with time and with experience. And I think with the confidence and knowledge that you belong there as well. And Bayern don't lack any of those things, especially with Thomas Müller, especially with Manuel Neuer in goal, Kimmich, Goretzka. This is a squad that not too many years ago, 3 years ago, won the Champions League. The team looks a little bit different now, but a lot of those players are still there and still playing a key role for Bayern. So, you know, they're not a million years removed from that. And even when they've not won the Champions League, they've been one of the teams that you look at each year, and there aren't many that you think they really could win the Champions League. Thomas Tuchel as well, obviously not with them, but is a manager who's won the Champions League and gone that far with a different group of players and sort of maybe upset a few people along the way and has claimed that competition. So, yeah, we think... You know, it looked a little bit like we could have done with a bit more know-how, a bit more nous against Porto at times, I think particularly in the first leg. And we're coming up against the side who, probably barring Man City as the holders and Real Madrid with their history in the competition, Bayern are probably the next team and next squad that you'd look at as having a lot of experience and Champions League know-how.
Yeah. There is, you know, an element of this, despite the distance in time and years between some of those games against Bayern Munich, where part of what we, I think, as Arsenal fans will look at going into these two ties is some measure of revenge. Because, you know, the 5-1s were really painful. There were some close ones as well. You know, there was the 3-2 exit, wasn't there, where we terrified them a bit in Munich, if I remember, and towards the end of the game they were...
3-3.
Was it 3-3?
Yeah, and then we were out on away goals, no?
Right.
We lost 3-1, I think, at home and
that's 1-2-0
out there in 2013.
Towards the end of that game, you know, they were desperately keeping the ball in the corner flag and wasting time, and we did give them a good scare, but the 5-1s sort of came at, you know, this time in Arsene Wenger's reign where things were... unraveling is not quite the way I want to put it, but I think they were very typical of end-of-era Arsene Wenger results. Like, you know, we could beat anybody maybe on our day. Well, there were teams we just couldn't beat, but, you know... It felt really damaging back then. It felt like it was chipping away at the sort of the foundations of everything that we'd built in the 20 years that Arsene Wenger had been there. They were embarrassing. To lose 10-2 on aggregate, you know, is embarrassing, really. And there is going to be that aspect of how we as fans, despite all this distance in time and changes at the club and everything else, will want the club and the team that we have right now to react to something that they weren't involved in, that is not maybe even connected to many of these guys. But as part of our experience as fans, you know, we carry that baggage into these games, even if I suppose the players won't.
Yeah, and it's something Mikel Arteta's referenced before as well, right? Like, it's not this group of players, but it is this club and our history. And like you say, we bring that into the games as fans as well. But Arteta's talked about it when we've ticked off over the past few years, finally winning at Tottenham again and finally winning at Old Trafford again, Chelsea too, and gone on a really good run the last few times we played at Stamford Bridge. That wasn't this group of players either, you know, had not won for X number of years at those grounds. But it is that group of players that have corrected the course and turned those into places that we don't have to fear going to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much of the same here. We're going to have to go somewhere where us as fans have some horrible memories. And it's down to these players to sort of replace those and get rid of those ghosts. Absolutely. I think Bayern and Barcelona, we spoke a few weeks ago, or maybe even during the group stage, and sort of, you know, well, you know, what comes next? And I said at the time I would love to play Bayern Munich and Barcelona in the knockout rounds at some point to sort of bury those demons, because we have them as fans, we have them as a club, and it would be fantastic to feel like we've, you know, different set of players, sure, but to feel like we've got back at them and put that to bed. And I think also there's still something outside of England, maybe to an extent within England, but particularly outside and on the continent, where we want to be a team that everybody fears, and beating Porto is not going to make us that again. Champions League quarterfinal against Bayern Munich, I think everybody, we've got the opportunity to make everybody around Europe stand up and take notice at just how good a thing it is we've got going on right now.
Yeah, and just how, look, the Champions League draw is interminable. It's like basically the worst thing about football. And there are many bad things about football, but the kind of preamble to them actually drawing the teams is possibly the worst thing about football that I can think of. I hate every second of it. But seeing Arsenal there, seeing our name up there with Real Madrid, you know, the biggest teams in Europe like Real Madrid, like Barcelona, like Bayern Munich, and even, you know, Manchester City as well, it feels like that's where we should be and where we belong. And the chance now and the opportunity now is to prove to people over the two legs against Bayern, however the game turns out one way or the other, hopefully, you know, the right way, but if it doesn't, let's make it competitive. You know, the chance is there to show that this is an Arsenal team that is going to be there, you know, for the seasons ahead and is going to continue to make progress. And like you say, not so much fear, but respect perhaps for what we can do and what we're capable of as a football team, that this is just sort of not quite a holy grail, but for this group of players, you know, it's like a clean slate in a way. It's a chance to sort of make their mark and make people sit up and take notice about who this team is and who mm-hmm. these players are.
Yeah, and the trajectory we're on, right?
Yeah.
Like that last season, they've already done it this season, that last season competing for the title for so long, like that it wasn't a flash in the pan, that we've got the ability and the drive to do that and then do it again and repeat it. But then that's what it's about. It's about doing it. Then you've got to do it again, but do it in the Champions League at the same time. And then you've got to do it next season in both competitions or in all four competitions. And that's what it's about now. Like, obviously, we all, like you say, we would love to win, but no matter how it goes, it's getting over the line is one thing, but being there and competing is the first step. We've done that in the league last season, we've done it again this season, and now it's the first time of asking, I think, really, that we've got like our long-awaited return to Champions League football. This is the first heavyweight clash, if you like, that we've got, and it's time to send a message to everybody that we're not here to make up the numbers like maybe we were in some of our last few campaigns in the Champions League, but we're here to scare every other team in the competition and to compete for the trophy at the end.
Yeah, because, you know, there was an expectation, I think, that Arsenal would beat Porto, you know, on paper. This is like if Arsenal hadn't been beaten Porto, you can be sure that the papers, you know, would have been full of Arsenal fail in Europe again, Arsenal shame, terrible Arsenal are this, that, and the other, had we not beaten Porto. So there was this expectation, but you're right, this is like a heavyweight clash. This is the sort of encounter that I think, you know, when you think about the Champions League, and when you think about the big games and the excitement that you can experience, you know, I'd absolutely take a run to the final where you don't play anybody of substance, but that's not the reality of what European football is these days. It's very rare that any kind of, in inverted commas, small club is going to get to this stage of this competition, just because of the financial aspect of how teams are built and the reality of the squads that they have and the quality of the squads that they have, you know? So I get it if people are like, oh God, Bayern, but like, you know, bring it on is kind of what I'm thinking on this. I'm really curious to see how we compete, how we fare, how we match up tactically, physically, you know, psychologically, emotionally, all of the things that we're going to take into these games against Bayern Munich. And of course, there are things at play here above and beyond Arsenal versus Bayern Munich. There is the Harry Kane narrative that's going to play out over the course of the build-up to these games and during these two games, because as sure as fucking night follows day, that fucker is going to get a penalty at some point, and he's probably going to score a goal at the back post at some point, because, you know, that's just kind of what he does every time he fucking plays us, and I thought we were rid of him, but we're not. But, you know, you can look at it that way, but you can also look at it in the other way. You can look at it in the way that, like, we could potentially make Harry Kane's first season at Bayern Munich, you know, a complete flop. At the end of it, he's going to stand there being knocked out of the Champions League by Arsenal with his trophy for winning best goal scorer, most goals in the Bundesliga, which everybody knows is a cannon. Like, let's look at it from that perspective. That's my thinking.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, that's the icing on the shit cake that is Harry Kane's career, right? Like, he's gone out there to the team that can't do anything but win trophies. He came off the bench and they lost for his debut, and they lost the Super Cup to Leipzig in their own stadium. They were knocked out the cup while he was sat on the bench watching by a third tier team, and they're 10 points behind in the league. The Champions League is it now for Harry Kane and for Bayern this season. We've already got Granit Xhaka on his way to denying him a league title. And now we can sort of finish the job off for Bayern and for Kane this season when it comes to silverware. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and pound for pound, like player for player, you go through the teams. We are not the Arsenal. I saw somebody share the 11 from the last 5-1.
Oh, God.
And, like, I really like some of those players. I'm going to try and find it again now. But some of those players, you know, like, they wouldn't get anywhere near this team right now. Player for player, you go through the 11s, and we're better than Bayern Munich right now. And you look at the way we play on the pitch, and we're better than Bayern Munich right now. And that's, like, as good as they are and they can be, that we are at this level. We're at this elite European level right now, and we have been for over a year. And Bayern Munich are, you know, it's not a bad ebb, but they're a bit of an ebb compared to the last 6-7 years. The 11, the last time we played Bayern Munich, Ospina, Bellerin, yeah, it's a great start, right? Bellerin, Mustafi, Koscielny, Monreal, Xhaka and Ramsey, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Walcott, Alexis Sanchez, and Danny Welbeck up front. Like, as good as some of those players have been for Arsenal, had been for Arsenal at times, I don't think you'd be hard pressed to swap more than one or two for the 11 that we've been putting out recently, and the form that we've been in. So, you know, it's a very different Arsenal. It's a different Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's too many reasons to be, you know, scared of them at all. I think wary, sure, because they're full of world-class players, but scared? Not by any means.
No, I don't think Mikel Arteta would allow a situation or even... Look, Mikel Arteta's built a team that shouldn't really be scared of anybody. Respectful? Yes. Absolutely. Cognizant of the strengths of the opposition, individually and collectively? For sure. Because, you know, you take anybody for granted at your peril at this level of football, but there's no way that these players, with the individual and collective quality that they have, should be scared of any team. There are going to be challenging games. There are going to be teams that are much more difficult to beat. But as soon as you go through some of the previous teams and, like, some of those players, I'm not going to say that they were scared, but are they the kind of, would you bet your life on them turning up with a performance for you when you absolutely need it? Not really. Whereas this current Arsenal team, there is a sort of, there's a strength of will and character pretty much from front to back that would make you feel a lot more assured about their ability to produce a performance and get a result. So, yeah, I have to say, I'm looking forward to it. One aspect of this, which is quite interesting, is the fact that Bayern Munich will not be allowed to have any fans for the game at the Emirates. They have been banned from traveling for one game because of, I think, pyrotechnics or something like that, fireworks. They threw fireworks on the pitch against
them. Their games in Copenhagen and at Lazio, there were pyrotechnics involved, and UEFA have given the away fans a one-game ban.
Right. So nominally, they will not be allowed in the Emirates. I'm sure that there will be some of them somewhere sneaking in, you know, creeping around in their Lederhosen and what have you. But
easy to spot Bayern fans, notoriously.
Exactly. They'll be holding tankards of beer and wearing Lederhosen. That's how you identify them. But it is a bit of an advantage because Arsenal can sell another, 3,500, 4,000 tickets? Mm. Like the entire 60,000 in the Emirates, you know, beyond the, perhaps some of the corporate seats will be Arsenal fans, and as a chance to sort of create an intimidating atmosphere, a lot of noise. You know, it is, I'm not going to say it's huge or anything like that, but if you're looking for a little tiny percentage things that you can take advantage of, I think that is an interesting aspect of this tie.
Yeah, like personally, I'd always rather play the second leg at home and have that home crowd for, you know, if you need to turn things around or just get yourselves over the line. I think that can be really, really important in these ties. On this occasion, with 60,000 Arsenal fans and not a Bayern fan in sight, I think that's got to be looked at as an opportunity to put the tie to bed if we start well and start on the front foot and get ourselves going really early. You know, the Emirates should be
absolutely... You're confident.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, the Emirates should be absolutely rocking.
Oh, it will be, but like, you know, to what extent does that allow us to put a team like Bayern Munich to the sword? Like, if only we had some fans here bemoan the Bayern players after the game, 6-0 down after the first leg.
I just think without any fans at all, I think the momentum, if you know, if we start fast and start well and get ourselves ahead in the game, I think the players should take so much from that and take so much energy from the crowd. And I think it's an opportunity to give ourselves a really, really good result. I think it's an extra opportunity to give ourselves a really, really good result that we take to Munich. You know, not 5-6-0 necessarily, although 5-1 would obviously be quite fitting. But, you know, a 2-goal or 3-goal lead to take to Munich would be absolutely enormous. You know, we've all seen, we've all experienced this season so far, how good we are defensively, and especially in these big games. I just think playing away from home second leg, I would really like us to come out like we did, you know, against Liverpool at the end of January.
Sure.
And put Bayern to the sword, but then don't stop if we manage to do that and really just go for it and hammer them. You know, when a boxer's got his opponent on the ropes, keep swinging those arms because he's going to go down. And I think we've had games this season, earlier this season, where it's felt like we've got ourselves ahead and then we're trying to find and measure that balance between going for the second or the third goal and keeping it tight at the back and in front of 60,000 Arsenal fans. I see this as one where, no, keep punching, keep winning. And, you know, Bayern are vulnerable. Like, as good as they still are, as many points as they have picked up this season, they are out the cup. They are 10 points behind in Germany. It's not happened by complete accident or mistake. You know, even the players that we've come up against in the past, Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer, they're not the same, you know, monstrous players that they were 5, 6, 7 years ago when we last played against them.
I mean, is it defensively where perhaps they are not quite where they were, or, you know, does that go across the board? Like, there's been a sort of a drop off in every level. And look, you know, they had a player like Arjen Robben who, you know, he was grudgingly a very, very good player. I hate saying it, but you know what I mean? He was one of those where people talk, like when Saka does something, everyone goes, well, everyone knew what Saka was going to do there, but he's so good they couldn't stop him. And there was an element of that with someone like Arjen Robben. And
I mean, to go back to the start of that, what you said, and if it's sort of predominantly defensively, Eric Dier's playing for them. And he's not sitting on the bench. He's playing. He's on the pitch at the moment, every game.
I had completely forgotten about that, and that is one of the funniest things that's happened this season.
I mean, I would love Eric Dier to play 180 minutes against Arsenal in April.
Mm.
I thought Tottenham's January transfer window had taken that opportunity away from me to watch Arsenal against Eric Dier this season, but it hasn't. We've got that chance. It's been handed back to us by the lovely man at UEFA and John Obi Mikel doing the Champions League draw today. So, you know, Eric Dier's at the back. Defensively, I would say, defensively is where they can be got at. You know, Joshua Kimmich is playing at right back as a man who doesn't really want to play at right back, who sees himself as a midfield orchestrator and has been told to play at right back now because the manager doesn't care if he upsets him anymore and they don't really have a decent, reliable right back. Left back, there's the rapid and brilliant Alphonso Davies. If there are any question marks about him, it is going in the other direction. Or Rafael Guerrero, who's incredible technically and creatively going forward. But again, the question marks are in the other direction. Eric Dier at the heart of the defence. If not, you know, Deo Upamecano is immensely talented, but seems to just switch off in big moments, in big games for Bayern and for France at times. And then in front of them, I mean, they're playing at the moment. Alexander Pavlovic has been brilliant. He's playing in the middle of midfield. He's 19 years old. He's played 12 times in the Bundesliga. He's broken into the team this season. 12 Bundesliga games. He's been called up to the Germany squad off the back of that for the first time this week. But you've got a 19-year-old and Leon Goretzka who likes to bomb on in the heart of the midfield. You know, it's... And then at the other end of the pitch, yeah, Harry Kane, Thomas Müller, who is obviously as intelligent when it comes to finding space and hurting opponents, and Leroy Sané, Jamal Musiala, are both incredibly technical and creative and gifted. For me, this is going to be a game, yeah, where definitely the way to get them is going to be going forward. I wouldn't be surprised to see Arsenal let Bayern have a bit of the ball. It's what Leverkusen did. They basically... go back to him. They basically just let Eric Dier have the ball. Yeah. They marked everybody else. They let Eric Dier have the ball on the halfway line and knew that he couldn't do anything with it. He couldn't hurt them. And then when Bayern came forward, when they did lose the ball, when it was turned over, they broke into space. They got down the flanks. They played 2, 3, 4 quick passes. You know, anybody wondering how we might fare in this one or how we might be able to hurt them. If you go back and watch the clips against Leverkusen from a few weeks ago, you just sort of, it whets the appetite. Imagining Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Martinelli getting into those spaces out wide and 2, 3 quick passes and we're away. You know, I think this game is made for that same sort of setup that we've seen at times, you know, press high. And if we don't win it high, sure, get back, get behind the ball. Maybe don't have it in them to break us down if you make sure the right players are the ones that are on the ball as much as possible and then break quickly and into space and hurt them.
Yeah, it's going to be certainly interesting. You know, Mikel Arteta calling up his old friend Xabi Alonso, his Basque compatriot, who of course is top of the table with Bayer Leverkusen, and Kai Havertz, former Leverkusen man, will be scoring the goals to knock Bayern Munich out of the Champions League. So lots to look forward to from an Arsenal perspective here. So...
a lot to look forward to, for sure.
A lot to look forward to. The draw itself, the rest of the draw, of course, is interesting too. On our side, because the semi-finals are predetermined, on our side of the draw, if we get through against Bayern Munich, we will be facing the winner of Real Madrid versus Manchester City. Now, I don't want to play Manchester City. I'd much rather play Real Madrid just because I'm not saying that Real Madrid would be easier. Their pedigree in this competition is unbelievable, but I would rather play Real Madrid than Manchester City.
That disclaimer came too late, by the way. Like, it will already be on the front page of Marca tomorrow. Prominent Arsenal fan says, bring on Real Madrid, they're rubbish.
Well, look, if that's what ends up on the front page of Marca, then they've got some pretty substantial problems, I would say. But you know where I'm coming from with this one. It's sort of like, you know, let's have this sort of epic tie between Manchester City and Real Madrid that somehow saps the energy of every single player in Sky Blue. But, you know, I just really dislike facing English teams in European competition. The familiarity of it, the sort of the close to homeness of it. There's just something more exciting about playing a team like Real Madrid. And obviously, you know, their history in this competition and their history in European football is second to none. So I would love to see that. But that's going to be an absolutely fascinating two games between those two teams as well.
It is. You know, like you say, we've been put on the easy side of the draw. Definitely, I think probably you'd say Real Madrid and Man City are the two teams that you would have as the two favourites, alongside maybe us if you'd put us there as well for the competition. So I mean, my first reaction when the quarterfinal came out was, you know, if we do go through, if we do get past Bayern, it's quite nice that Man City and Real Madrid, one of them all be knocked out for us.
Mm.
That was obviously before the semi-finals were drawn. It turned out we'd have to play the winner of that tie for sure before potentially a final. Yeah, it's like you say, as draining as possible, as many cards as possible, extra time, please. Put Man City through the ringer in both of those legs. They play, you know, it's not the... I know they've got Luton at home sandwiched between those two legs, which is maybe not what we'd have hoped for. But before going to Madrid, they've got Crystal Palace away. And after the second leg in Manchester, they're away at Tottenham. So in terms of the title race too, those are not friendly fixtures to have either side of your Champions League quarterfinal against Real Madrid, I don't think. It'll be interesting to see how they do in the league as well as in the Champions League ties. And it's not the worst way that it could have fallen for us.
I suppose the thing is, people will look maybe on paper, it's Manchester, it's Crystal Palace and it's Luton. But I suppose those two teams will be looking at the draw and thinking, well, if there is maybe a little bit of an opportunity for us here, if they've got half an eye on their Champions League games, which, you know, I think is maybe a little optimistic from our perspective. But, you know, if we can raise our level a couple of percent, and if they're sort of half distracted by 1%, it might give us a better chance to get a result away at Crystal Palace. Is never that easy, as we know. Man City at home versus Luton, you know, ordinarily you would expect them to win that game fairly easily. I think they probably will, but they will also probably rest some players for that game. So it might give Luton a chance. We'll wait and see. But it'll all play out before our very eyes. The other side of the draw, of course, is PSG versus Barcelona. Again, two quite interesting games. Flawed teams, you would say, both of them. But potentially, you know, exciting ties ahead, and Atletico Madrid versus Borussia Dortmund. I mean, with your affinity for Dortmund and your Dortmund hat on, is that an all right draw? How do you think Dortmund will fare against Atletico, who we know play a very specific way under Diego Simeone? Is it going to be a case of this is going to be like Arsenal versus Porto, but heightened?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. I don't think Dortmund are having a particularly good season, and I don't think they could have asked, with the seven other teams remaining, I don't think they could have asked for a much better draw than that. And I think all four of those teams on that side of the draw, if Inter had gone through against Atletico the other night, I think you'd be thinking of them as big, big favourites to make it through all the way to the final with that side of the draw, the way it's gone. You've probably got, you know, obviously Barcelona have lofty ambitions and high ideas of themselves, but you've probably got four teams realistically who aren't really, you wouldn't say necessarily good enough to be in a Champions League final this year. And they've been handed a path which gives them a sort of a realistic opportunity of getting that far, which personally I think is good. As a, you know, if you take a step back from the Arsenal perspective, I think it's good to have a draw where you might have, you know, a less familiar name or a less obvious name going all the way and reaching the final. So in that sense, the draw's turned out quite nicely. And I think it's probably given us as well, you know, you said flawed sides, Barcelona and PSG. I think you could say the same for sure about Dortmund and about Atletico Madrid this season. You've got four or evenly matched quarterfinals, I'd say, that will probably produce a lot of interesting, tight football matches.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, I have to say. And, you know, I'm sort of invested in the Champions League again very quickly because, you know, for the last number of years, we haven't been in it. And even when we were in it and going out in the round of 16 on a regular basis, it was hard to sort of continue your... Like, I would just sort of go, ah, fuck it, I don't really care. You know, obviously from a footballing perspective, you watch the games or, you know, but it's like, who gives a shit? Whereas this time around, I'm really excited to see all of these games and see where the draw takes us. So I guess that's just part and parcel of being back where we are. And hopefully we can give a good account of ourselves. Edu, the Arsenal sporting director, said, we have to dream because of the way we play, the moment we live. Why not? We know we'll play against a team that's experienced with spectacular players, but we are in a good moment to face Bayern. So it's all ahead of us. It's all ahead of us. Okay, let's pivot slightly to the other big story of the week, which beyond Arsenal qualifying for the quarterfinals of the Champions League, which we've discussed, is the contract extension signed by Ben White, which is going to keep him at the club until he's 30 or 31 or something like that. But not unexpected news. We were all pretty much well aware that this was going to happen, but fantastic news because he is a fantastic player. And I think, you know, at 26 years of age, still at a point where his best years are well and truly ahead of him.
For sure. I think we've seen each season, is it three seasons now of Ben White at Arsenal? I think we've seen a better Ben White every single season that he's been at the club so far. So, you know, long may that continue over the next few years. He's, yeah, as excellent as a centre-back, probably even better now as a right-back, fit all the time. You know, I think even go back to his season at Leeds, he plays pretty much every single game.
I watched a video of a guy, I don't know, was doing the rounds last week. It was a Leeds fan who did a little video, whether it was a TikTok or something like that, around the time that we signed Ben White, and there was all this like, Ben who? How much? You know, and he did this video saying, because who was it they lost? I think he came in to replace
Pontus Janssen.
That's right, who was like a stalwart for Leeds. He went to Brentford. They brought Ben White in on loan to play. Not only did he play every game that season for Leeds, he played every single minute of every single game that season. And he was saying, look, I understand there'll be people saying, who is this guy? How much have Arsenal paid for him? But wait till you see him play and you will understand why Leeds fans hold him in the high regard that they do, and you know, the potential that he has to develop into the kind of player who will make that transfer fee look like chicken feed. I'm paraphrasing here slightly, but that was the gist of his video recorded just as he signed for Arsenal. I mean, I don't know who the guy was, but my hat is off to him because he absolutely knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, there's, you know, that dependability. I didn't know that every single minute of every game.
Yeah, every single minute of every game.
Mental. In the 46-game championship season,
yeah,
that is unbelievable. Playing for Marcelo Bielsa, of all managers as well.
Yeah.
It's absolutely grueling. I mean, we've obviously had it before with Ben White playing through incredible pain with a hamstring injury that Rob Holding reckoned he shouldn't have even been able to walk, really, and playing through that in the Premier League for us a couple of seasons ago. He's been, yeah, great in every position we've put him in, and there's been a few, you know, even this season playing exclusively at right back, but his role has changed. He's, you know, Zinchenko's been out, he's been tucking into midfield, but he's still been overlapping Bukayo Saka and helping out on that right-hand side as well, and timing his runs well and getting good deliveries into the box. He's become, you know, for me, completely undroppable as an Arsenal player. I think when Saliba came into the side, there was obviously a bit of a question at the start of last season what it would mean for Ben White, and especially if Tomiyasu was available, what does that mean for Ben White? And I don't think right now there's a question that Ben White has to be playing, maybe not every game, but every important game. When we want to get our best 11 out on the pitch, Ben White is in there 100%. I know he's And he's definitely got that cult hero thing about him. You know, he gives absolutely everything. There's something a bit snide and rough around the edges about him. And yeah, I think we've all, as a fan base, fallen in love with really talented footballer.
Look, I think, you know, your point about him being a cult hero is spot on, because I think in some ways he's a very unique character in the professional game. Because of all the things that we know about him, that he doesn't like to watch football, but, you know, is clearly very dedicated to his profession and to his craft. And he's a funny guy. He's a bit sly. He likes the shithousery. You know, he gets in the face of the opposition. He'll do the sly trips. He'll kick the ball onto Martin Odegaard's head after we score a goal. All of these kind of hilarious, funny moments that are just part of why we all love him, and regular listeners and readers to Arsblog will know that, you know, I fucking build a shrine to this guy because I really like him that much. But part of why I think that stuff is so why we connect with it and why it is so endearing is that he is a fucking brilliant footballer. And I do mm-hmm. wonder if maybe that other stuff doesn't, not overshadows it, but means he doesn't quite get the credit he deserves for what he does on the pitch. And I wrote about this in the blog today, where there's a lot of discussion about the platform that Arsenal have with William Saliba, Gabriel and Declan Rice as this kind of spinal element to our team. And undoubtedly, that is true. But Ben White is kind of like the fourth guy. He's the other guy. It shouldn't just be a trio. They are a quartet. When you look at the minutes they've played, when you look at the availability, when you look at the amount of appearances that they've made this season, those four guys are basically out there on their own. And I think in a season when Jurrien Timber got injured, who would have played games at right back, you know, sure, he might have played some games at left back, but he would have played games at right back. And Tomiyasu has been injured, who did play some games and minutes at right back. That Ben White has carried the burden of that position basically on his own for at least 50%, if not more, of this season. And to produce the kind of form that he has produced and the consistency that he has produced speaks volumes about who he is as a footballer, way above and beyond his status as this guy that everybody loves and wants to see, you know, trip up Harry Kane as he's running towards our goal and somehow get away with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's what I think, had a look, 5 starts for Tomiyasu this season, obviously a handful of those at left back as well, not at right back. Like you say, we've lent heavily on Ben White, and it looked before Christmas like he was physically feeling that burden. But since the break in January, he's come back and played maybe the best football of his Arsenal career to date. The other stuff is obviously a bit quirky and overblown. He doesn't watch football and all of that, and is Benjamin, not Ben, and all of that stuff. I think, yeah, when you don't watch Arsenal every week, it helps. It helps you with the overshadowing of Ben White, but we all know how excellent, how valued he is. And I think, you know, when you're saying there, you know, Gabriel and Declan Rice and Saliba as that triangle at the back of the team, and how strong they are, the foundation they give us to play. I think if you know, cast your mind back 20 years, the last time probably Arsenal had a team at this sort of elite level, and the last time we won the Premier League, and if you go through the first 11 there are players that do sort of get forgotten. And you know, you go forward and it's Henri and Bergkamp and Pires and Vieira in midfield, and maybe Freddie Ljungberg becomes a little bit forgotten or a little bit underappreciated. Even for my money, you know, because Vieira and Bergkamp and Henri were there, Pires is undervalued for the highly world-class player that he was. He probably doesn't quite get enough love and appreciation that, you know, if he'd have been playing in different Arsenal sides, he would have been the best player in them by an absolute mile.
Not for me.
Over the last
Not
15
for me.
Years. Well, yeah, no, but he would have been.
No,
in the
I
last
agree,
15
I agree.
Years, like everyone would have agreed on it, right? Like, oh, this guy, he's head and shoulders above. And back then, because of his teammates, it wasn't. And the same at the back, you know, Campbell and Cole, and then Torre and Loren. Maybe Torre a little bit more over time, appreciated, but then Loren is the one who obviously does get forgotten, and as part of that massive part of our success in that back four. And yeah, Ben White's sort of in that area right now, where if he'd have been playing for Arsenal a few years ago, everybody outside of Arsenal maybe would also see how good this guy is. Whereas right now, you know, he gets mentioned last week against Brentford because he got 2 assists, but most weeks he doesn't get assists, and he's still 8-9 out of 10. It's just not so easy to see when you don't watch us every week.
Well, that's true. It is great news, and I think he's going to be continue to be a huge player for us over the coming years. And look, the idea, you know, once Jurrien Timber gets fit, that there might be a bit of timeshare at right back. Maybe there will be. But I also think we have to stop thinking in these sort of binary terms about, like, once a player plays a few games in a position, we immediately discard whoever was there first. You know, we have to build a squad. We have to build a squad who can compete across multiple competitions. You know, I think we still have some way to go in that regard. And, you know, what Ben White can give you at right back, also at centre half, what Jurrien Timber can give you at right back, at centre half, at left back as well. This is going to be part, a continual part of how Arsenal develop and get better over the coming years. So it's brilliant news. I mean, the other aspect of this, or the other part of this that's been in the press is the England stuff. And he made it known he didn't want to be considered for selection for England. Gareth Southgate had some comments this week saying he didn't really know why, which of course we all know is complete bullshit. Gareth Southgate knows it's complete bullshit. Everybody knows it's complete bullshit, but I suppose he can't really come out and say, well, he had a big falling out with my assistant and he doesn't want to play for England while that guy is there, or maybe while I'm there. I guess he can't say that out loud. I mean, what do you make of Southgate's comments? Do you think it could be problematic for Ben White? Is there a different way he could have played it? And you know, as an Englishman, what do you think of his desire not to play for his country? Because some people take that thing quite seriously, as if it's some kind of treason in some way that you just choose not to play international football.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, I think Ben White is, like you said, he's a bit of a unique character, and he's his own man, and he will not, I don't think, compromise too much on that if he thinks that somebody else in the discussion is wrong or has mistreated him or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me at all that Ben White, the person, is like, no, I'm like, as long as the people I don't like who I've had bad experiences with are involved, then I'm not interested in going and playing for England. Or more to the point, I think if you go back and look at that World Cup and what happened last winter, wasting my time by going over there and in the international break and not even playing for England anyway, and just sitting on the bench and watching. And, you know, nobody knows exactly what conversations were held or exactly what was said between Southgate or Holland or White himself. But I think, like, personally, I obviously have an immense respect for Ben White sticking to his guns. You know, I think a lot of players would maybe fold because the Euros is coming up and I'm not interested, but now I'm in really good form and now they will pick me and get me on the pitch and it's the Euros. Like, I personally respect that he's sticking to his guns and to his principles and would rather just stick to not playing for England as long as those are the people that he'd be involved with. I think if Gareth Southgate isn't the England manager come the end of the summer, I think Ben White will be playing for England come September for sure.
Maybe.
Southgate's comments, to me, it's just sort of, he knew that it was going to, the way that we're playing and the way that Ben White's playing, he knew it was going to be a pick, like it is for any England manager. When somebody's in form and they're not getting picked, you can't do an interview without being asked why that guy isn't being picked. And it was a way to deflect and put all of the blame on Ben White and to protect himself, which, like, on the one hand, you think is bad man management. On the other hand, well, Gareth Southgate doesn't owe Ben White any man management because he's not going to play for him anyway. If Ben White gets abused from the media for this decision or in stadiums around the country when he's playing for Arsenal, not Gareth Southgate's problem. I don't like the way that he's gone about it, but I think Gareth Southgate's looking after himself and his role as England manager, and he knows that Ben White doesn't play any part in that.
You mentioned criticism in the media. Thankfully, Jeff Powell in the Daily Mail has got a very reasoned reaction to this. He says, "If my father were still alive, he would be mortified to know that White plays for the Gunners. Not through any affiliation to Arsenal, but because he fought through the Second World War in the Royal Artillery. But let's have it right, Ben. While kicking your heels instead of a ball can be a mite frustrating, it does not carry the risk of a lifetime never again being able to kick a ball because your legs have been severely injured." So that's the kind of stuff
that... It wasn't about fascism, World War II, for some. It really wasn't about the fascism. It was about the well-paid footballers turning up and I don't know, cleaning Kyle Walker's boots while he plays every game at right back.
Mad. But look, that is the world that we live in. I'm sure Ben White will not care one jot about what Jeff Powell in the Daily Mail says, but that is the kind of stuff that's out there, and that is the kind of stuff that might well feed into how people react to Ben White, but he can be sure, of course, that he will be loved and protected by Arsenal Football Club, the manager, his players, his teammates, who all had very nice things to say about him in the little video that accompanied his contract signing. And of course, I'm pretty sure 99.9999% of the Arsenal fans. Okay, we had better leave it there. Lewis, as ever, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Andrew. Have a good weekend, and good luck to Arsenal women tonight against Chelsea.
Oh yeah, big game. Of course, you can follow all that with Tim over on Arsblog News. We'll have all the coverage of that a bit later. Lewis, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed, as always, to Lewis. You can find him on Twitter. He is at LG Ambrose, at LG Ambrose. It is an Arsenal-free weekend. It's an Arsenal-free couple of weekends, of course, because of the FA Cup this weekend. Then there is an interlull. But don't worry, James and I will be here with an Arscast Extra for you on Monday. So please join us for that. As ever, thank you very much indeed, as always, for listening, for downloading, for sharing, and for just being part of it all. We really do appreciate it. Have yourselves a great weekend, whatever you're getting up to. It is St. Patrick's Day, of course, on Sunday. So we will raise a glass to St. Patrick of Vieira and St. Pat of Rice and his wonderful son Declan, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, folks, cheers, bye bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.